The image that we have of God, our understanding of what he is like, is going to have an incredible impact on our spirituality, our faith, the practice of the faith, etc. Let me extrapolate. So if a person sees God as this sort of almighty lawgiver who's waiting for us to fail so that he can punish us, if that's how you see God, that's going to really very much impact your faith, right? And how, obviously, how you relate to God and how you see even being Catholic. And generally, that if that's kind of what you grew up with or what you were taught, et cetera, that's usually going to go in one of two ways. Number one, you're going to seek to kind of get rid of that, right? You're going to seek freedom because we all desire freedom. And being in relationship with a lawgiver who's waiting to punish us is not a great relate. It's not healthy. So those people often leave the church or just kind of get rid of faith altogether. But a person also might decide that that relationship is something that for some reason they actually like, which leads them to becoming sort of a rigorist, right? Somebody who's really focused on laws and the rest for themselves, which leads to a very sort of punitive relationship with God that they then even convey to their own children. Again, not so healthy. Now, in the church, we see sort of this ebb and flow, just sort of as church and how things are conveyed throughout history. And so in the early part of the 20th century, you had very much that sort of image of God, right? A focus on sort of guilt and obedience to the law, etc. Now, that's what the baby boomers kind of grew up with. And then my generation, Gen X, comes along and the baby boomers completely ruin us because it's a little gratuitous there. But what happened was there was a bit of a pendulum swing. And so my generation grew up because, you know, the boomers had their experience, which wasn't good. My generation grew up with this other sort of image of God, which was very much focused on God doesn't give law, almost as though there's this dichotomy between law and love, which there isn't, but that I'll get to that. And so the focus became very much just about love without any kind of law or need for obedience, etc. And then, of course, as I learned more and more about God, I thought, well, that's kind of one-sided too. And if you take merely that view, it leads you to a place where, well, you might as well just do anything. Nothing I do really matters because, you know, God's just going to forgive me and he loves me anyway. I don't need to improve. I don't need to be better. I can just, you know, et cetera. And that's a lie. That's not getting at it either. So my perspective on this, like getting to, and just so you understand this about every homily I give when I'm looking at the scriptures, is I'm trying to encounter the Jesus that is here in the page, in the book, in the scriptures, and convey who Jesus reveals himself to be as authentically as I can. I cannot watch any movie about God or Jesus, or Journey, or anything that I know a lot about. There's more, but we'll leave that to the side. Because if I'm watching a movie about Jesus or some kind of documentary or the church, I mean, if you watched it with me, I would constantly be hitting pause and saying, okay, let me tell you what's really true. That's not accurate because of this and that. And so I can't even watch it. Right, and you'd be the same, right? I mean, if you're a lawyer and you're watching like a show about whatever lawyers do, you know, you'll be critical. A doctor, you're watching a show about doctors, and you'd be really critical about, you know, the medical profession and how it's conveyed. Or if you're a CPA, you know, you would, oh, don't worry, nobody will make a show about your field. But we would, so you can understand, right? It's the same for all of us. If it's something that's really close to us, right? we're going to be much more critical. It's just hard for us to enjoy it. So anyway, my perspective is, what did Jesus say here? And how can I, as authentically as possible, convey that to you, okay? Without, you know, some sort of, I mean, there is some interpretation. I can't get past that completely, but I try to be as faithful as I can. So here we go. That was all the introduction of my homily, by the way. Now I'm going to preach my homily. Who does Jesus reveal himself to be? What is he like? What does he say he is like? And it's very clear that there's a bit of a paradox in who he says. Because on one hand, he says, the law remains, right? We don't get rid of the Ten Commandments. However, that's true. However, Jesus constantly wanted to spend time with the people who disobeyed the commandments. That was one of the big criticisms and scandals about him, is he wanted to spend time with all the bad people who weren't doing what they were supposed to do, the bad people. He obviously didn't see them that way. Of course he didn't. But at the same time, he didn't give up the law, as it were, or the commandments. But what he desired to do is, as we all do, the people he loved, he desired that they be better than they were. But he would, of course, love them and accept them where they were, but would always want them to grow and move forward. Now, think about this in our own lives. Those of you who are parents, right? You're the object of your love is your children, and you want them to be the best they could possibly be. When they're in their terrible twos, you accept that it's their terrible twos. But if their terrible twos become their terrible 20s, you might be a little bit disappointed in their lack of growth, right? You want them to grow. But even as husband and wife, right? Your beloved, you want your beloved to be better. You completely love them as they are, or you wouldn't marry them, presumably. You, of course, you love them as they are. But that doesn't mean that you don't want the love that you have to perhaps assist them in growth and virtue and goodness and holiness. It's all of this intertwined. And one of the things that we think is that, you know, freedom or love means just accepting everything about the other. Well, that's not true. I mean, on one hand it is, on the other hand it isn't. It is true that those we love, we will always love them. We'll love them even if they sin. We'll love them even if they make mistakes. But that the love doesn't mean we're okay with that. The love is that we desire for them to be better, and we hope that they will be better because it's good for them. Well, so God is this way. Think about some of the things he says. Think about one of the other parables of him being the shepherd, where the shepherd who has 100 sheep, but he's lost one, he will go after the one who is lost. The 99 are fine. He's going to do everything he can to get that one back. And when he brings the one back, he rejoices more, we're told, over the one coming back than all of the 99 who are already there. The Lord Jesus is overjoyed when someone comes back. Another parable, which is, you know, so poignant, the prodigal son, right? So the younger son tells his father, I want my inheritance, which is kind of like saying, I wish you were dead. And he goes off, well, because that's how you get your inheritance. Dad has to die, right? So I want my inheritance now. So he goes off and tries to find happiness in every other way possible. And he doesn't find it. But he remembers the kind of man his father is. So he knows he can go back. He figures, well, if I can just go back and be one of his hired men, I would be better than this. So he goes back. And here is, I believe, the most poignant part of the story. We're told while the son was still a long ways off, his father caught sight of him and ran to him and was overjoyed at his return. You know, he didn't lord it over him. You know, he didn't sit in the kitchen, as it were, and waited for his son to get in the door and said, yeah, it didn't work out, did it for you. Right? He didn't lord it over him. No, not at all. I mean, you just kind of get the, and I understand it's a parable, it's a story, but, you know, going with that, you know, how many times did the father look off into the distance where his son left hoping for his return, longing for the day his son would come back. And then on that day, he sees him coming back. He doesn't wait for him to get there. He doesn't, again, you know, tell him, see, you were wrong. He runs to him. He engages him. He welcomes him. He throws a party for him. This is who Jesus is. This is who the Father is. So when he's talking about the sheep, he's saying, look, and two main aspects of this particular parable, the greatness of the shepherd, he is the good shepherd, is that he will lay down his life for his sheep. He will give up willingly, not by force, willingly give up his life for his sheep. And he did so. That's how much he loves us. And that's really important for all of us to I think, get this authentic understanding of what he's talking about, because there are some of you here who wonder, am I good enough to be here? You know, I found my way back, but have I done too many bad things, or have I been away for too long that I can't come back? No, in fact, God's heart is bursting with love for you particularly. If he were here today in person, he would want to spend as much time with you as possible. You, the lost sheep who found your way back to church today. That's who he is first drawn to. So that should give all of you men a great deal of consolation. I will not pick on the women. But you know, we're all at one point or other probably one of the lost sheep. And this is important to remember. We're all perhaps going to be in that place. And we will wonder, can I go back? Teenagers, you know, once you get kind of free of your parents, you got to make your own decisions. You may find yourself lost, or young adults may be the same. And you may wonder, can I go back? You can always come back. You can always come back. And the Lord is not waiting to punish you. He's waiting to throw a party for your return. This is who our God is. So it's a God who loves us and wants to raise us up and for us to discover true freedom, which is found in virtue and goodness and holiness. He wants all of that for us, but he is desperate to have us close to him, no matter where we've been. And then the second aspect of this is, he says, my sheep know my voice, you know, they know me and I know them. I know them intimately. Now, I don't know hardly anything about sheep herding. Actually, I don't know anything, but I've read a couple things because, you know, I read stuff. And apparently, you know, this is kind of how it works, that you can have two shepherds with their flocks, you know, and the shepherds being, you know, gentlemanly, they come together and they talk about whatever it is sheep herders talk about. You know, what kind of shears do you use? I don't know, whatever they talk about. And so as they're talking, the flocks will intermingle, you know, because that's what animals will do. And so they all intermingle. And then when the shepherds go their separate ways, because the sheep are used to the voice or the, you know, the whistling or the singing or the different sounds that the shepherd makes that they get used to, he will call out to them and they all fall in line. They all follow. No one gets lost. None of the sheep get lost with the other flock. They all fall in line and follow their shepherd because they know his voice. So the image here is not sort of the, oftentimes the modern twist on this that, oh, you're just a dumb sheep. No, that's not what he's getting at all. What he's getting at is a relationship of trust. Once we learn his voice, once we trust him, we will follow him because we know that he's laid down his life for us, he will protect us, and he's not going to lead us to anything that is bad for us. And so important then for our own spirituality is to take some time in our lives to really give a space, so some quiet, putting the phone down and putting the, you know, getting alone once in a while, spending some time just listening for his voice and getting used to that. It's so important, especially with all of the distractions and cacophony we have in the world today, to find some moments of silence and ask the Lord to speak to you. And I guarantee he will. And the more that you do this, the more fine-tuned you will get at hearing his voice. My dad had a 1964 Ford and a Galaxy 500. It was sparkly purple. Yeah, I don't know. It was his mom's. But anyway, it had an old AM radio. And you can explain to the kids what an AM radio is. But you know how you're tuning an AM radio and you tune the dial and then it tunes in and you get it. Sometimes the spiritual life is like that. It can be staticky and kind of mixed up and jumbled. But the better we get at fine-tuning that, meaning the better practiced we get at listening to his voice, the more clear it will come through. And once you get that, once you're connected like that, you'll never give it up. You will never give it up. Because then you have found this relationship of trust in him, and you will have confidence that he will only lead you to good things. Please stand.